We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The trade deadline is over and the youth movement has started. I think the last part of the season should be pretty fun for the Royals.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. My name is Joel Penfield. Thank y'all so much for tuning in the midst of football season being underway. I still appreciate y'all listening to this weekly show about a last place baseball team. But joining me to talk tonight is Jacob Milham. He is the host of the Royal Rundown podcast, does some other work throughout Kansas City Sports Online. You go to his Twitter bio. He has talked about the Chiefs and the Royals quite a bit, but he's taking the time tonight. And I know you got another show to do, so we got to get rolling. But how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Hey, I'm staying busy like y'all over at KCSN. I'm just not as big. My umbrella is much smaller. I think it's like a water glass while y'all are, you know, a downpour. So I'm all here for it. Thank you very much for having me on.
Hey, don't sell yourself short, man. You do great work. But we got a lot to talk about. Recap the trade deadline, some of the roster moves that have happened over the past week. Before we get to that, the show is always brought to you by Kansas City Strength and Conditioning. Let's hear a quick word from them.
From the beginning, we knew right away that we wanted to do strength conditioning and a throwing program for the baseball and softball community. It wasn't something we were trying to back into or all of a sudden learn. We knew we were really good at these coaching these skills from the get-go. And the fact that we're in the same business and the employees are all on the same page, you know, we can write a program based off of what a kid needs, not just getting him stronger or faster from a general sense. It's what does this kid need? On the pitching end, we can say, hey, this kid needs such and such. He needs to do this or that better. A lot of times it turns out it's not something that needs to be fixed in the baseball cage or on the throwing mound. It actually needs to be fixed in the weight room.
Thank you, as always, to KCSC for sponsoring this show. Be sure to check them out if you have a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train. So the trade deadline has come and gone. I did a live reaction show on Tuesday, about an hour after the deadline. The Royals made a few moves. They made three trades within like the day of before the deadline, and then on the day of, they traded Emmanuel Rivera to the Arizona Diamondbacks for a Luke Weaver pitcher, who is likely going to be a reliever for the Royals, possibly works his way into the rotation next year. The big move was trading Whit Merrifield to the Toronto Blue Jays with Samad Taylor and Max Castillo. Taylor is a middle infielder. Max Castillo is a pitcher. They're both currently in Omaha. Castillo probably works his way to Kansas City at some point before the end of the year. And then they also traded backup catcher Cam Gallagher to the San Diego Padres for outfielder Brent Rooker. So not anything flashy, nothing crazy, but they made some of the necessary moves they needed to make by trading Ingram and Tindy and by trading Whit Merrifield, and then you got the couple ancillary ones by trading Rivera and Gallagher, two that I wasn't expecting, but felt like kind of obvious moves in hindsight. But what were some of your thoughts on what the Royals did at the deadline?
Yeah, you really have to focus on what they did instead of what they didn't do. I know I was on trade deadline day. I was clamoring, you know, seeing the returns on some of these relievers. I was like, hey, go knocking on some doors. Let's get Barlow out the door and let's get some of these top prospects as well. But that 11th hour trade of Whit Merrifield, I think, really made the trade deadline a kind of a wash. You know, it had some positive things. You got some people out the door. I really like the return from Merrifield, honestly. I think yes. Castillo is an underrated return. I was talking to some guys who covered the Toronto Blue Jays, and Castillo was sent down so that they could stretch him out into a starter. So I think he has a very good chance of, you know, cracking that rotation, especially with a lot of question marks on the Royals. But it wasn't great. It wasn't awful. It was an okay trade deadline in my view.
That's about how I feel about it. I'm not trying to focus too much on what they didn't do. I feel like they could have done more, but they made two necessary moves they needed to make. And to me, that's fine. Like I'm good with that, and I'll leave it there. I wish they would have gone into the reliever market a little more, yeah. Looked at a Scott Barlow, at a Josh Sama, but with the years of control left, you know, the Royals shot for the moon. They value these guys very significantly. There was some sniffing around Brad Keller, apparently, that was reported by Mark Feinsand. But again, with another year of control, I don't know if the Royals wanted to make that move. Could be one they revisit at the offseason, maybe. Mm-hmm. That could be a team goes and gets him as a cost control for one more year. Michael A. Taylor felt like an obvious candidate to get traded, with some teams needing a fourth outfielder, but that's not a move they make either. Likely, so I think that they'll revisit Michael A. Taylor in the offseason too.
For sure.
Especially with how Drew Waters is playing right now in Omaha. It looks like that could be your starting center fielder in 2023, and Michael A. Taylor becomes expendable. Or at the worst case scenario, he becomes your fourth outfielder. You're not paying him, I think it's like $4.5 million, if that, next year. So that's a guy you can have on your bench, and that's just fine. I don't know. But I don't know if he'll be any better next year than he was this year. He's having one of the better offensive seasons of his career from just a hitting perspective. He's hitting around 280. The power's always kind of okay with him, but
yep.
I felt like that you probably wouldn't have gotten better value for him, you know, any better value for him than you would right now. But
no.
Hindsight's always 20/20. That's one. I'm a little upset that they didn't go and try and replenish the farm system by going and getting something for Scott Barlow, something for Josh Stallman, even Amir Garrett. I think Amir Garrett still has some value out there. I know it necessarily hasn't worked out in Kansas City, but the right team, I feel like, can still fix him, and he's very valuable.
So at the end of the day, the Royals did add, you know, 6 or 7 prospects that cracked their top 30.
Yeah.
So I think that was, they didn't really add any top tier talent. Obviously Waters was kind of the best prospect that they got before the trade deadline, but I don't know. I wouldn't say they replenished it, but they definitely made it a little bit more interesting, I think. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I think there are certainly some guys that are intriguing out of there. I think Waters is the biggest, like, kind of surefire guy that's in a premium position that the Royals need. They don't really have a legit center field prospect in the system right now. They have guys playing center field, but do they have a guy that you really think can roam the K for the future? And they really don't. Like John Rave, maybe, but he still strikes out a whole ton. And I don't know if he's a good enough athlete to do that every single day. They've sent Nick Lofton out there and he's been okay. I know they play Nate Eaton out there. He's been okay, but I don't know if they have a true center fielder every single day, which also probably is why that they held on to Michael A. Taylor, because they don't want to put Kyle Isbell. They don't want to put Nate Eaton. They don't want to put anybody else out there that maybe they think can't hold it down the way that he can right now. So I get that. Putting your players in a position to succeed. So I get that. Beck Way, TJ Sikma.
Yeah.
Those guys are fine. Like I think there's a big leaguer in there between the two of them. Beck Way feels very reliever-ish, which is fine. I think he's... Yeah. Got a very nice profile with a hard fastball and a hammer breaking ball. If he can cut down on the walks, there's a very nice reliever there, kind of like a Dylan Coleman type, would kind of be what I'm thinking out of him. I don't know about Samad Taylor. He's kind of like, he's good. Like, he's not necessarily, there's no like carrying tool. Like, he's not leaning on one plus thing to carry him to the big leagues, but he's just kind of good across the board. Not necessarily in the same way that Nick Lofton is. I think Nick Lofton's a better player, but in that same thing where like Nick Lofton is just very good all across the board without something eye popping. I think Max Castillo has a chance to factor into the rotation next year as your four or five, a big fastball, a good changeup, a good slider. I don't know yet where he fits in, but I think there's a chance he can at least compete for a rotation spot. If not, I think he can be good out of the bullpen still. I'm curious how they use him in Omaha, if they decide to continue to stretch him out like Toronto was doing or not. Other than that, Brent Rooker is probably just a quad A guy, a guy you can, in a pinch, can come up and play in the big leagues. Big-time power, big-time strikeouts, but a good athlete and someone in a pinch you can throw in there as a lefty bat. And maybe there's a platoon opportunity there for him with like an Edward Olivares or something like that, and go from there.
Hey, they had to replace Ryan McBroom somehow, right? I think now you have Brent McBroom there in Omaha right now.
That's not a bad comp, actually.
I'll have to check in to see how he's doing across the
ocean. He's in, is he in the KBO or the NPB?
He's in the KBO, if I recall correctly.
That's right. Yeah. I liked him when they got him. I was like, oh, this actually could work. And then it was just like, oh, he's just a jag.
Hey, look, there are some guys who are just gonna be quad A guys.
Yep.
I've called Ryan O'Hearn that myself because, you know, he goes to Omaha and he looks amazing and he comes up to Kansas City and he looks so I don't know.
I think quad A is a compliment for Ryan O'Hearn, but I'm not going to go any further down that road. I've done that way too often. But what was your favorite move of the ones the Royals made from – you can go back to Carlos Santana if you desire. But of the trades the Royals made, is there one that kind of sticks out as, like, you think the best one that they made?
Honestly, I think the best trade, in my opinion, by far, is trading that competitive balance pick, the 35th overall selection. Considering what the Royals have turned that level of pick into in the past, I'm blanking on which pitcher was selected there in the 2018 draft class.
I think that was, I want to say that was Lynch.
So, I mean, Lynch has been solid, but he might also be an outlier for the Kansas City Royals, especially considering, you know, how spotty the pitching development can be for this system. Now you get Drew Waters, a guy who is struggling in the Atlanta Braves organization, to Kansas City, where Kansas City has the correct hitting development coaches to quote-unquote fix what was wrong with him. Andrew Hoffman, a pretty good return there. He's still in Double A, if I recall.
He's in Double A, and he's been okay.
He has been okay. Last I checked, I'm kind of tossing it up to, you know, it's a change, different coaches, different environment, that might be it. But if he doesn't kind of have some more good outings by the end of the year, we might want to address that one a little bit more. He looked great for the Braves, so the good pitcher is there. The pitcher that can, you know, go to Triple A Omaha next year is there, but he just has to come out. And CJ Alexander, he is not a blowaway prospect, but here's the thing. He gives you organizational depth at third base. And especially with the Royals trading away Rivera, you know, I'm not saying Alexander deserves an MLB promotion next year or the year after, but if injuries hit that position really hard, he could come up and at least competently play the position.
Yeah, and that's a guy that absolutely hammers baseballs when he makes contact. And that's the operative word there because he strikes out a ton. Yeah. But when he makes contact, he hits it really hard. I agree with you that I think trading that comp pick was the best trade the Royals made. And that's not a knock on any of the guys that they got back. But when you just look at the value of what they were able to get, I like it. And here's just some perspective on how good Drew Waters has been since he's come to Kansas City. For Triple A Gwinnett this year in 210 plate appearances in Triple A in the International League, / .246, .305, .393 with 5 home runs, 16 RBIs, Walked 7.6%, K'd 27.1%, 84 weighted runs created plus, so 16% below league average, and 5 stolen bases. Since coming to Kansas City in 78 plate appearances in Omaha, he's hitting 338, 423 on base, 676 slug, man. 5 home runs, 11 RBIs, 9 stolen bases. The walk rates come up to 12.8%. Still K'ing at 28.2, but that's come down 2% over the last week, so that's not nothing. And a 186 weighted runs created plus. So he is now 86% better than league average. Now, I understand that is a small sample size of 78 plate appearances, but you can see that they're obviously making some significant changes with him. And my God, his power is stupid when he can get to it.
It is.
He's not like he's got some really nice pull power, but he's able to just flip balls to left field with ease and it goes over the fence. It's unbelievable what he's able to do. And he looks like the type of guy that can be your center fielder in 2023 on opening day.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him for a few games in 2022. I wouldn't rush him though. I would let him stay in Omaha and, you know, really get solid there. But I hate to say it, but when I saw DeGrom go against the Storm Chasers, I thought Waters like absolutely bullied him. And I mean, you're talking like one of the top 10 pitchers in all of Major League Baseball, and Waters hit a 3-run home run shot to left center right off of him.
Yeah.
And he made it look super easy. So he's a very tantalizing prospect. He is, in my opinion, he's the best prospect that the Royals picked up overall there's not much for debate. I think he has a middling floor, but he also has a very high ceiling. Now it's all up to him in Omaha to see how high he wants to set his 2023 ceiling.
Yeah, I don't have super high expectations for him, at least initially in the big leagues. Like, I think he's still a really good runner. He's a great defender. The strikeouts are going to hurt him early. But if by the middle of the year he's playing every day and he's at like an 80 or 85 weighted runs created plus, then I'm going to feel at least okay that he can get better and go from there, especially working with a guy like Alex Zumwalt. Like, he's going to make good adjustments at the big league level. I trust that the hitting coaches to be able to work there. So there is at least that return there makes me feel good. Now to the big league club. The season is what it is at this point. Like, I'm not going to try and hammer it too bad. They won a game in Chicago, but they only scored 5 runs in the entire series. So that's not great. But Whit Merrifield did give us a nice parting gift by hitting a home run, the go ahead home run in his last game for the Royals. So, you know, good luck in Toronto. But the Royals now are going to the youth movement. Like, it is happening. It is here. We finally are seeing a full, like, a lineup that is 2/3 guys under the age of 25. Michael Massey gets called up right after after Whit Merrifield is traded. He is selected. Angel Zerpa, unfortunately, is going on the 60-day injured list, effectively ending his season, which sucks because I really like what Angel Zerpa is able to do. And I think he's a guy that factors into the rotation next year as well. And then today it was announced right before the game, Nate Eaton, who got a little bit of time in Toronto, now is selected from Omaha. They optioned Michael Garcia to AAA, so still technically a promotion for where he was in AA, but now he's going to be the shortstop there in Omaha. And then Edward Olivares, who again has been awesome this year when he has been healthy. The quad injury is nagging him. He goes on the 60-day and effectively ends his season there too. But tonight in the lineup, the only young guy that's not in there that is going to factor in every day is Nick Prado, but it's Bobby, it's MJ, it's Massey, it's Vinny, it's Nate Eaton. You know, there's a good chance tomorrow all of these guys from a Friday night game are going to be in the lineup. Mm-hmm. And this does not mean that I think the Royals are going to magically turn their season around, but it's at least going to be interesting. For the first time all year, it actually feels interesting to sit down and watch the Royals every single night. Not just for Bobby's debut, not just for MJ's, not just for Vinny's debut. I know a lot of people watch those games for the debut and then probably started following casually. Now these guys are all in the lineup every single day and are going to start factoring into the winning that we hope is going to come starting next year. So it's at least exciting right now to be a Royals fan, to see all of these guys, all of the promise, and now there's a great opportunity for them to hold down some positions and be a part of the future.
Yeah, there certainly is. I'm just sitting here thinking about, it wasn't that long ago where it felt like we were pulling teeth trying to get the organization to promote Vinny Pasquantino. And now they're just bringing promotions, you know, seams left and right. But this isn't just promoting players for the sake of promoting players. These are all guys who have very much deserved a promotion, and they have proven it at each level they have promoted to this season. I mean, Michael Massey, he had some batting stats that were like head and shoulders better than Vinny Pasquantino during their time together in Omaha. Nate Eaton, he has a lot of good defensive tools, and he has a solid bat as well. I missed if they scored his hit tonight as a hit or if it was an error. I don't know.
Let me check the box score while you're still talking.
But he is, you know, he's already making an impact out there right field right now. So at least the Royals are tantalizing again. They're interesting. And like you said, I don't think anyone should expect them to, you know, even play 500 ball right now to close out the season. Like, they're not going to win half of their games between now and then. They might, and that would be a great step forward to 2023. But I'm not going to expect that. I'm going to focus on the individual growth. I'm going to see, hey, is, you know, Nick Prado, he had 6 strikeouts in the Chicago White Sox series. Is he going to improve on his plate approach? Vinny Pasquantino, his ground ball rate is, you know, it's climbing and climbing and climbing, and it ain't looking too good. Is he gonna fix that before the end of the season? So team record out the door. If you want to be a negative Nancy, you could focus on that, but if you want to be positive, let's watch these young guys play and see what they can do.
So for the record, Nate Eaton's batted ball was called a hit, at least according to the MLB box score. That could change later, but that those types of things are not often changed unless it was blatantly obvious. So
yeah,
suddenly Nate Eaton gets a knock in his home debut at the K, and I think that's kind of cool for Massey and for Eaton, as these guys have gotten a little bit of big league time, but this is their first game at Kauffman Stadium.
Yep.
So it's going to be pretty exciting. And you got the Red Sox in town, so you know there's going to be a decent crowd there every night. So these guys are going to get a really good opportunity to showcase themselves and showcase themselves to the future of Royals fans. And I'm excited. I'm going to the game tomorrow. I'm hoping to get to see a lot of these guys in there. And if you are looking to take your crew out to the K this summer, be sure to check out our friends at Tickets for Less. Ticketsforless.com has the best selection of tickets to all your favorite sporting events, concerts, and shows, including the Royals. Tickets for Less never charges per ticket fees, saving you big time over the other sites out there. You can save even more when you use our exclusive partner code at checkout. Simply enter code KCSN22 when ordering your seats at ticketsforless.com. That code again is KCSN22. We will be right back after a short break.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Jacob. So I'll open the floor to you. Was there any topic that you wanted to bring and talk about, whether you need to vent, whether you need to something that you haven't talked about on a podcast yet that you feel like you need to air out what you got?
Well, so there are a couple of points, but I would feel remiss if we didn't talk about a little bit more on Whit Merrifield. You know, I wouldn't say it was an unceremonious trade. Everyone, you know, gave him his flowers on the way out. But at the end of the day, I'm going to do my best Nick Wright impersonation here. You know, bring my hands up into the screen. I think that Whit Merrifield was the best post-World Series Royals player on this team. I think he brought a lot of hope to the team. I think that he brought some competitive spirit to the team. Now, did he get a fair shake? I don't think he did. I think he should have been on the World Series roster. I think he should have debuted a little bit earlier. And that kind of threw off his career in, you know, the whole track of it. I mean, the guy is 33 right now, and he could, you know, he very well should have debuted much earlier. But I do have to say, let's take away the vaccine statements for a second. Let's take away the kind of floundering performance early on in 2022. And I think I really think that he is one of the best Royals players of the past couple of decades, at least. And I think that he should get some recognition for that. Now you can push back on me all you want.
No, I don't. No, I don't have much of that, honestly. Like, to be honest, he was my favorite player for the last, since he came up. I love guys like him that had to grind to get there. Like, there's something to be said for the Mike Trouts, the Bobby Wood Juniors, the Julio Rodriguez's, the Juan Soto's that can just roll out of bed and go hit 300 and just the natural talents there. But I have an appreciation for the guys that had to grind every single day to earn that opportunity. Like, and it was not one of those that was, you know, a given that they were going to be a big leaguer. There was no chance of that. Whit Merrifield was a senior sign that got drafted in the 10th round. Like, there's no guarantee those guys make the big leagues. And especially after being a senior sign that took 6 years to get there. So yep. There is something to be said for that. He won a couple hit crowns. I believe he won a batting title or got close to it a couple times over 300. He won two or three stolen base titles. He was the best player on a bad team for most of that time. Now, was he the overall best? Maybe not, because I still think Salvador Perez, you know, you got fair. An argument there, but yeah. Most consistent, sure. And the fact that you can go out and man the post for 550 consecutive games. Like,
yep.
I understand the streak should have been ended a hell of a lot sooner, but there is something to be said for being able to go out there and prepare and man the post for that many games in a row. And the fact that he did it was the longest streak in the big leagues by a mile, and he still wasn't going to come close to getting the Cal Ripken Jr. streak.
No.
So I think it's still a remarkable achievement to be able to do that. And he made a couple All-Star teams. You know, again, that's not a given to be able to do that. So I think there will be Royals fans who will look upon him fondly, because he gave you, like you said, you gave a little bit of hope during one of the worst stretches that the Royals have had in a very long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a couple hundred lost seasons. He's still out there leading off hitting 300.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of guys would be able to do that. So there is some credit there. Do I think things ended unceremoniously? It absolutely did. Like, how often do guys like that get booed at home? Right?
Not often.
Now, I know it was just the one night, but think about how beloved he was in this city for so long for it to turn that quickly based on the comments he made. And that has nothing to do with his decision to get vaccinated or not. It's more to do with the decision of, well, I guess my stance will change if I'm on a playoff team, which was a slap in the face to his teammates and the organization that's given him so much.
Yeah.
So it did end unceremoniously. It ended awkwardly. But I wonder how how history will look upon it in a couple of years. I know not right now. It looks like I'm going to turn on the Blue Jays game probably when we're done recording just to see. And it's going to look weird not seeing what Merrifield in the Royals uniform. It just will. But not like, whoa, that looks wrong. I think it's just going to be like, oh, you know, because you saw him every single day for 5-6 seasons.
Yep.
So there is something to be said for that. I'm curious how history looks upon him. I don't think he's a Royals Hall of Famer, but certainly going to be looked at as hey, that guy was a pretty good ball player for a long time.
Yeah, he was. And you know what? I think maybe in a few years we can revisit the case of him being a Royals Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the best in the organization. But let's put that to bed for a little bit. Let's let the man actually retire and, you know, maybe go get a championship of his own if things go right for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the playoff chase now. Right now, he played for the four seed, and I am happy that he's going to get that chance in October, because I know how desperately he wants it, considering he didn't get the opportunity in 2015. So I know that he's going to give it his all there, and I believe he's playing center field tonight for the Toronto Blue Jays. So that'll be interesting. Yeah, I know Springer's hurt, so that will probably be why.
That's cool.
Yeah. Any other notes here? I know you want to talk a little bit about Bobby Wood Jr.'s defense at shortstop. It's obviously not been pretty. The move back to third base feels obvious right now. I don't think that closes the book on him playing shortstop. I think the yips, I don't even want to call it that, but like the errors at shortstop and the errors in the field happen to rookies like that all the time. Yep. I'm not worried about it. There's a track record of him being a fantastic defender. by all accounts, at shortstop for his entire minor league career. The scouting reports came out when he was in high school. I don't think he magically all of a sudden is terrible. So, but for right now, if you just want to keep his confidence up, let him play third and then let Nicky play short and give him that opportunity, then we'll go from there. But I'm not as worried as I know some other people are. I'll put that way.
Hey, there, and you know what? I don't blame you one bit for that. I did put out an article for Inside the Royals, you know, talking about maybe the Royals moving him to their full-time third baseman because the organization doesn't really have that many high-tier options at third base, while you do have some pretty solid options at shortstop. So maybe if he needs to kind of let himself slow down within the game, because that's what most of his errors look like. They look like he's just moving too fast, and that's okay. That happens when you have an super athletically gifted, I hate to say it, but kid out there playing a game that he's played all of his life. You know, he's talented. He's gonna figure it out. But when it comes down to brass tacks, right now, Bobby Witt Jr. is one of the worst defensive shortstops in all of baseball, unfortunately. His defensive run save metric is absolutely in the dirt.
Outs above average is awful.
Yeah, and you know what? That's okay. It happens. We're not even talking about the guy below him in those, in MJ Melendez. But it's a part of being a rookie. But both of their bats are good enough that you want to keep them in the lineup. You don't want to sit them down just because of that. So the move of, I think really, Whit getting traded, or Whit Merrifield getting traded, was the domino that needed to fall. Because then you move Nicky over to shortstop better, and then you have Michael Massey right there at second base, who is a pretty solid defender.
He won the Gold Glove for all of minor league baseball at second base last year. He's legit. Yeah.
So yeah, you know, pretty solid. Yeah. No, I'm kidding. But so you have very much a defensive minded middle infield right there, and Bobby Witt, he is average at third base, and that's okay. Keeps an above average bat in the lineup with average defense. I'll take that any day of the week, man.
Oh yeah, and I also think that playing him at third puts a little more, like, I don't think it puts a little more pressure on his bat. I think it just allows him to just play a little freer and just go. Like, we saw that early on in the year. Like, he still made some really nice plays at third early on in the year when he was playing there every day when Mondesi was healthy. So I don't think, like I said at the beginning, I don't think this closes the book on him being an everyday shortstop. I still firmly believe he'll have that opportunity next year. But if for now, if you want to play him at third, give him some time at shortstop so he can still keep that, you know, in his back pocket and move on from there. When it comes to MJ, I know the catching has not come along, but similar to Bobby, there's a track record of 3 years in the minor leagues where he was one of the best defensive catchers in all of minor league baseball. So I think the learning curve was certainly a little steeper for him. I thought the ability for him to catch would take pressure off his bat, and he was going to be able to really at least thrive defensively. That has not been the case. He's playing left field today. I know they're shifting him around the outfield. I don't know if that's going to end up being his permanent spot, but if nothing else, that versatility is nice to have.
It is.
And I still believe he has the opportunity to be the catcher of the future whenever they decide to just make Salvi full-time DH and let MJ be the guy. And I believe Sebastian Rivera is on the roster now too, so that takes some pressure off of MJ to really get things going. And you have to figure this out right now. Like, no, we'll catch you once, maybe twice a week. We'll let you get comfortable there, and we'll keep things going that way. Rather than, okay, you're just going to keep catching every day. I know it's been bad, but we're just going to keep throwing you out there and see what happens. I think that's a sign of a good job by the staff and the front office of the Royals to not put all this undue pressure on both those guys and just, hey, you're going to keep failing. You're going to keep sticking here. Baseball's already hard enough, but no, we're just going to keep sticking here where you're obviously having some problems, right? When we can move you a little bit, take some of that pressure off, and just go out there and play ball.
Exactly. And I think you have to give kudos to this team. I think right now they do have pretty solid backup and versatile options at each position except for second base. I don't know who slides over if, like, Massey goes down and Lopez is at another spot on the diamond. I can't think of someone off the top of my head. but
you could probably bring up Michael Garcia.
Oh yeah, yeah. So bring him back up, slide him over. But like I'm saying, you know, if you want to give Bobby Witt Jr. another shot at shortstop, then you just swap him and Nicky. Nicky was pretty good at the corner. You need to give Prado a break. Like today, you have guys like Isbell, Eaton, Melendez who can go out there, and they're all kind of moving around together in those outfield spots right now. So we had a lot of pretty valid criticism of the management of this team, both on and off the diamond to start off the season. I think they have shown some better decision making in the late season. There is something that should be said for that. But I don't know, man. I still kind of want to see some moves made in the winter.
I fully agree there, and I've hammered that point enough. I don't need to go down that road. I can head down that road as we wind the season down and head to the offseason. One more thing I want to talk about before we get out of here. Brady Singer has impressed the hell out of me. This last start in Chicago did not go as planned, but he still went six innings, and he gave up the four runs. But when you consider that last year, I don't think Brady Singer goes six innings and only gives up four in that game. Right. Like, I think he gives up eight and is done in the fourth. Right. Like, it just feels that way. And then you look at the start he had in the Bronx, where he goes seven innings, one hit, 10 strikeouts. He had a 2.5 ERA over the month of July. He had three or four starts with nine strikeouts or more. He's becoming the dude that we all hoped he would be.
Yep.
And we were in the middle of recording during his start last week, so I didn't get really the full chance to break it down. But coming into the year, I was like, you know, just stick him in the bullpen. And let's just let him be sinker slider and move on. I didn't know if he was ever going to throw the changeup. It seems like now he actually will. Still not throwing it a ton, but it's at least there. Mm-hmm. And the sinker is just ridiculous when he's on, when he can just put it anywhere he wants and gets that slider going back foot. Like, he had everything working there against the Rays and against the Yankees. So I'm excited for what he's going to do the rest of the season, and then I feel a lot better about him going into 23 as your two. I didn't think he would ever be a two. I thought maybe he'd be a three at the best, but I think he's certainly a two right now, and that is awesome for the Royals.
It certainly is. You know, at the beginning of the season, we didn't even know if he was going to be the five.
Yes.
He was very much on this active roster bubble heading into the season, and now I couldn't imagine the rotation or the team without him. I feel very much a defensive difference when he's on the diamond. I think that it is a big cohesive change for this Royals team defensively when Singer is on the mound. It could be confidence, it could be communication. I don't know what it is, but sometimes you just have those intangibles that you can see with the eye test, and that is one thing that Brady Singer brings to this Kansas City Royals team. And I mean, come on, when the guy's nearly hitting opposing batters with pitches that they're swinging at, it's just absolutely impressive. I hope this isn't just a hot streak. I hope this is a sign of something that has changed. But it's certainly, you know, flipped the script on his long-term outlook in Kansas City, in my opinion. I'm very excited to see his next start.
Yeah, and looking at two of the other guys, Daniel Lynch, he didn't go very long in that game. It seems like he's over whatever blister issues he had. And I know he didn't go very long in that game in Chicago, but he was throwing with the same conviction that we saw in high A, that in low A, that made us think this guy is going to be an ace. Like, he has that type of potential. He has that amount of FU in him and the stuff plays. And I think we're starting to see him turn a corner a little bit. Chris Bubich, if you want him to be your five, I think he's actually pitched to that right now. Like, is everything going to be stellar? No. But he's not walking near as many guys anymore. I don't think he had a walk in his last outing in New York when I thought he was going to get absolutely destroyed. He didn't. Mm-hmm. And went six innings and gave up a couple of runs and got out of there. Like, if that's what you're asking him to do, then I think you can completely fill that expectation. So that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, we're starting to see these young guys round into form. And when John Heasley comes back, maybe he gets back into the fold, and hopefully Angel Zerpa gets healthy for next season. And you got some roster decisions to make.
Yeah, you really do. I was sitting and thinking about it today, and this is going to be a big question that needs answering in the off season. You got to figure out something to do with Jackson Kowar, because if that class had gone to plan, Jackson Kowar would be your ace, your number one guy above Brady Singer.
I think so too.
And I wouldn't say it's disappointing, but it kind of is. You know, thinking about what could have been. You know, you could have had for years, you could have had a staff of Kowar, Singer, Lynch, kind of the flex four and fives there, with several options for those four and fives. It's, I don't know. I sit and think about it when I want to write a story so many times. I just can't punt on Jackson Kowar quite yet, man. I can't do it.
Yeah, I know. I can't either. I love the guy. I've loved him since he got drafted. I thought he was going to be a dude. It has not panned out. Maybe he's able to work something out this offseason and come back and be either a really good reliever, or hopefully he can get everything figured out and be a starter. I don't know. But I hope, one thing I hope, and all, this will kind of be one of my offseason wish lists, but go make a trade like the James Shields trade. Go get a cost control pitcher that you have a plethora of bats that teams would covet. Package a couple of them together and go get a guy like a Pablo Lopez from Miami, or I don't know. Or you go and just throw a bag at like a Nate Eovaldi or something like that, and go and just solidify the rotation that way. I don't know. Or F it. If John Sherman really wants to be a nice owner, go and throw a bag at Jacob DeGrom. He's going to free agency.
Yeah.
That is a 1,000% pipe dream, but I'm going to keep trying to hope I wish it into existence with positive affirmation and it actually happens.
Hey, you know what? Keep plugging it, keep manifesting it, and it'll eventually happen, right?
Exactly. All right. Last question before I get you out of here, Jacob. I know you got to go do another show, but I appreciate it. Go follow all the work he does at Inside the Royals and Arrowhead Addict, right? That's your Royals site?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Yep. Go. He writes, he podcasts, all that good stuff. We'll plug it, you know, all of your stuff on social here.
Thank you. I appreciate
Before we get you out of here, what would your walk-up song be if you had to take a nap at the K?
Oh my gosh. Wow. I wasn't even, if I really wanted to troll Kansas City fans, I would pick the Applebee's song. And this is where Joel takes out the earbuds and he walks off screen.
We don't talk about that.
No, we don't talk about that one bit. I don't know. I'd probably go something, you know, 90s country. You know, you love those songs to appeal to the fans, like Chattahoochee by Alan Jackson or something.
Oh,
like
that's
that.
A good one. That's a good one. All right, I like that. I like that answer.
Much better than Walker Hayes, huh?
Yes, by a million miles. All right, well, Jacob, this has been awesome. Thank you so much. Sir. And everyone listening, be sure to go like this video, leave comments. I go and hop in there and answer any questions you guys have. Subscribe to the audio channel, subscribe to the YouTube channel. I know there's a lot of Chiefs content out there, but I appreciate anybody that listens to this or watches this. And we'll talk to you all next week.